It's 8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Summit County is set to begin the Jeremy Pinebrook Interstate 80 Roundabout Project this spring. In the studio with details, I have Summit County Public Works Director Derek Gradke. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So when does this start?
Well,
do we have a start date?
We don't have a date yet, but we have one property yet. We have a temporary construction easement. We're still trying to work through some issues. All the other check boxes are checked. If we work through that in the next day or so, we're hoping for an advertisement on or about March 30th, a bid opening about the fourth week in April. And if all that goes well, we should have a mid-May start for actual construction. We hope that some of the utilities will get started in advance of that. So hopefully, 30 days or so ahead of that.
Yeah, I thought the utilities was done like last fall, no?
Well, all the utility agreements were in place. There was a water line replacement last fall that was done in advance. But all the other utilities, all the fiber, the gas, those in power, all still need to be moved.
Yeah, any idea what those bids might look like? We keep just hearing construction costs just keep increasing.
Yeah, our costs have gone up significantly over the last 2 or 3 years. When we first started looking at this, it was like a $6 to $7 million project, and we're at about a $10.5 million project. About 2.5 to 3 of that, is added work for all the pedestrian improvements, so the two tunnels, and then there's another $1.5 million on top of that that the rec district approved for the tunnel under Kilby. So we're still chasing that one as well.
Where's that tunnel going to be? The one at the school or another
one? It's another one right across from Fresh Market shopping area. So it goes under Kilby Road, and then we have the next one at the on-ramp, eastbound on-ramp, and then the next one is the westbound off-ramp. So we have three tunnels building that project, and it's a significant amount of money.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we figured that was the only way, given that the roundabout, there's just no safe crossing.
Yeah, right.
It's
better to have the off-grade crossings.
Okay. So the timeline on this, if you did get a mid-May start, would you be finished then by the time next winter?
So the way the specifications are set up, the contractor has to be done paving by the 1st of October. Given normal construction slips, if they're done by mid-October, we still have good weather enough to pave. And then, of course, there'll be the cleanup, the landscaping, final striping, signs, those kind of things that fall after that, but should be finished by mid-November.
Do you have the drawings online so that people can look to see what is happening exactly?
So we've placed some drawings on our new on the project website. It's Let's Go Summit. If you Google that, you should pop right up. We have a model that's basically shows the roundabout project, shows the cars going through it. And we're trying to tweak a few things to make some things a little more clear, but it's online. It gives a great representation of what the project will look like. There's also some still drawings and things like that that are up as well.
So we basically have four intersections, right? I mean, we've got it from the frontage roads, and then we also have the interstate intersection. So the plan is to create two intersections, or are we just putting the roundabouts at the interstate on and off ramps?
Nope, it basically combines all those intersections into two roundabouts. The roundabouts are about 240 feet across, so they're quite large. It brings the on-off ramps into the roundabouts, brings the frontage roads into the roundabouts. So it'll be an interesting, not too complex, but an interesting intersection.
Okay, and we still feel like roundabouts are the way to go here, because that was a decision made, gosh, a half dozen years ago.
Yeah, we started looking at this in 2006. We had a consultant way back then that looked at several options. There was a signal light option that was chosen, or looked at, not chosen. But in order to make signal lights work for all the cars, we had like five lanes across. The distances between intersections is so short. In order to stack enough cars, you had to have multiple lanes, and it's just not feasible. So this really is, without a total reconstruction of the interchange, which was at the time not supposed to happen for 20 plus years. And they did some rehab work this last summer So that structure is not going anywhere anytime soon. So without spending $25 to $30 million on a new interchange, this is, you know, by far the best option for this location.
Okay, so these are going to be two-lane roundabouts then?
They are two-lane roundabouts. There's four lanes going under the freeway, and all the traffic merges through. There's a new cutoff for the Jeremy Ranch folks who don't need to go to school. They want to go directly to, you know, westbound to Salt Lake. There's a little cutoff hook that will make transportation out of that area much more easy. It should function really, really well for a long time to come.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about traffic mitigation. That's what you're kind of working on
right
now. I mean, we're going to start where, on the Jeremy side or the Pine Brook side?
That's to be determined. The contractor will decide. My guess is he's going to start on both sides. He's got a short time to get it done. My guess is they'll be working in all four quadrants simultaneously. There will be night work. That's yet to be determined. Until we get a contractor on board, we really don't know how they're going to approach the project. But some of the things that we're doing, first, we're starting off with some public information, as much as we can get out there that it's coming. There will be construction delays. Our project website is set up so that you can sign up for alerts, and the contractor will be providing weekly traffic control plans, and we've specified that those plans come in a graphical form instead of just written form, so that people can actually see on the screen how traffic will be funneled for the week. And, you know, if there's a midweek change, then we will update the website accordingly. And email alerts will come right to you. Some other things that we're doing is our construction engineers is going to be working with Blinksy to set up traffic monitoring so that it gives a great picture of when the peak times are, the times to avoid. It'll be live, and you can look to see, you know, is it red or is it yellow? I'm not going to say it's green, but so hopefully that information will help the public decide when to travel and to avoid the as many construction delays as possible.
Yeah, I mean, is the answer going to be just to get on to the highway from Summit Park? I mean, if you lived in Jeremy, I guess you don't have a choice because it doesn't go through.
I think everybody's travel things are going to be different. It's just going to depend on where you live and where you're trying to go.
Yeah. So how is this going to affect the Ecker Park and Ride? Because, again, with all of that construction, people coming off the highway are going to be in for, I mean, we could see some backups, yeah?
Sure. We actually kind of anticipate Ecker will see a few more cars because, unfortunately, the Jeremy Park and Ride will be during construction, it will be closed because we are reconstructing it. So we're adding some spaces. The way the new road is configured, where Rasmussen Road goes from the Jeremy Roundabout to the service station on the corner, that road actually becomes parking. So the Park and Ride will be closed more than likely. I would guess the contractor will stage from there because there's only a few other spots that's not under construction that they could actually place equipment, store culverts, you know, construction materials and things like that. So we hope that people will take advantage of the Ecker Hill Park and Ride.
Okay, so the $10.5 million, who's paying for that? County taxpayers?
So it's the bulk of it is coming from the sales tax stuff, but we are receiving $1.9 million from UDOT funds. Those are federal funds, which turned it into a federal project. We are taking about $2 million from our traffic impact fees that have been collected over the last, you know, umpteen years, and the rest of it is from the transportation sales tax.
Okay, so we've bonded for that?
Those will be the bond funds that were passed or approved, I think, last spring sometime.
Okay, again, so we'll know more, you're thinking, next month then?
Yep, as soon as we have a contractor on board and we have our first, pre-construction meeting, I'm happy to come back and try to explain what's going to happen.
Okay, any concern about getting a contractor?
No, I think we've got a lot of interest, actually. There's a lot of work out there that the state's put out, and which will probably impact our bid prices a little bit. There is just a ton of work out there, but we've talked to a few contractors, and there's a lot of interest. This is a big project.
Let's just talk about how your staff, I mean, we've got some sunshine, a little bit more snow coming on, but now with the warmer roads, I mean, how does your staff dealt with the snowiest winter that we've seen in years?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun this year. Comparing to last year, just quickly, we had 44 times last year, last winter season, which we kind of go from October to April. We had 44 times when our guys went out at some point, you know, and about 15 to 20 of those may have been really minor storms where we just had to go hit it with a little salt and blow the snow off with the plows. So we used only 4,500 tons of salt last winter season at a cost of about $192,000. This winter season from October 18 till just now, we've used 7,200 tons of salt and at a cost of about $288,000. And we've been out 62 times this year. So that's a significant change.
Yeah. So you budget though for it, or you carry money over, or you're short? Or?
We are still okay budget wise. A lot will depend on how quick winter comes on next season. I think we'll probably put a couple more loads of salt in our bin, but we're pretty much done spending money on salt this year.
All right. Any numbers on how many cars that you had to tow or issue citations for not following the winter parking regulations?
So we're not sure anybody got towed. The deputies are very, very busy during those times. We have to have a deputy, call in that tow. We can't do it ourselves. We have had their assistance, and usually they don't have time to wait around for a tow car, so they'll run the plates and call the owner, and the owner will come out and did it. So we've called in 20 to 25 times and got assistance to have people moved, but we're not sure that anybody actually got towed this year.
Okay. As we've been giving people a heads up, Kilby Road has a detour this week while we're putting that canopy there over the pedestrian ramps and stairs there in front of the Ecker Hill Middle School. You're starting construction at 9 each day, ending by 3?
Right, yeah. Well, the detour will only be in place during the times when school pickup and drop-off are not occurring, so the impact of traffic will be minimal. We did the same thing during construction last year. It went pretty smoothly.
Yeah, and have the fixes that needed to be made to Kilby been done?
The fixes to Kilby will happen when it warms up and get the pavement temperatures up above 50 degrees so that the paint will stick.
Okay, and how much more will that cost, do we know?
It's a few thousand dollars to get it painted. It's not a ton of money. And it's got to be painted anyways. It's like at least annually and probably biannually for a while.
Okay. The Bittner Road connector to Lower Silver Creek, is that getting moved ahead this year?
That one's still, council's still working through the options that have been presented to them. So when they have time to think about it, they consider it, but we haven't. That project wasn't gone forward back to the public yet. We're not sure yet whether that will, happen this year or not. And if it does, if anything happens, it'll be design work and possible property acquisition.
Okay. Anything else you want to update us on?
No, I think that does it.
Okay. Again, that website that people can find out, just Google "Let's Go Summit" and
yep.
It'll pull that up on
yep.
the county
Should
website.
Pop right up.
Okay, Derek Radke is the Public Works Director for Summit County. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Utah Senate President Stuart Adams says that education fared, quote, very, very well this legislative session. Park City School District Business Administrator Todd Hauber joins us now to dissect the legislature's impact on education. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you think? Was it a good session for education and students?
Absolutely. When we look at the increases in the education fund, we're looking at a little over 9% coming into public education, which includes a 4% increase on the WPU and additional monies coming through for the Teacher and Student Success Act. So that, between those two pieces of money, that's almost 5%.
Okay. So we're familiar with the WPU. What does that mean in terms of what cash in hand for Park City School District?
Sure. So that's about $800,000 that will come into the school district's budget for next school year.
Okay, and then what's the Teacher and Student Success Act?
So that act provides additional funding for schools to improve their academic outcomes. So the money will come at the school level. So it'll come through the district, but essentially be for each school individually, kind of like the school community council monies that come from trust lands. So it'll come in, the school principal will then be responsible for putting together a school success plan that uses those dollars to improve academic outcomes.
So what's your recommendation how that money gets spent?
So it can cover a number of things. We're looking at areas of improving mental health and whole child support. So these dollars can be used for those purposes. It can be used for software and different online solutions for providing education and supporting students. So it's pretty broad in what it can be used for. Again, it's looking to improve those academic outcomes.
Okay, so we're talking about 5% for that?
So that's an equivalent of 1% on the WPU. So between the 4% on the WPU and the TSSA money, that adds up to about 5%.
Okay, and then where's that other 4% going into public ed?
So it's coming in a variety of different ways. Some of the programming is at the state level. It provides a grant, like matching grants for mental health professionals in the schools. So whether it's psychologists, social workers, counselors, there's about $30 million that goes that direction. And then there's some other support systems that are going into the State Board of Education that add up to a little more than $20 million.
Okay, because we had talked earlier about the $32 million in funding for more school counselors. Is
correct.
That part of this then?
Yep, so that's part of that $30 million number.
Okay, but I think we only got $20 million.
So in the end, it came out to be about $26 million ongoing. $16 million will be available for this upcoming school year, and then the balance will be available the year after.
Okay. So any idea how Parks, is it done on a per pupil basis then?
So the money will be available on a matching grant basis, mm-hmm. Which we had asked for a number of the school districts. We've already gone down this path, and we've hired additional counselors and school psychologists. And in the original form of the bill, we would not be able to access any of those dollars. And we thought that wasn't appropriate. You know, here we are trying to make it work. And so they changed it to a grant matching program. And so since we already have dollars that we're using this way, we can use that to leverage more dollars from the state.
So how do you feel what was passed will improve school safety?
So the House Bill 120 that passed will put together a team at the state level. So public safety and health department, along with the State Board of Education, will have all of the bright minds and best practices brought together in a team. And then they will promulgate board policies and recommendations that we can turn to improve whatever we're doing at the local level. So it will bring to bear a greater knowledge base to improve school safety. And then we can pull those things out that make most sense for our local areas.
Yeah, so what do you think in terms of what of that $26 million over the next couple of years, what Park City's share would be? I mean, what are you budgeting for?
So at this point, I don't know because I'm still trying to figure out how all that will work out. But I would assume that there would be enough money to hire an additional professional services provider, you know, whether it's a psychologist or a counselor. There would be at least that much money available.
Great. Back to the WPU then, that 4% that goes into the coffers. I mean, how is that spent with just school operations?
Yep, basically school operations. We had already pre-programmed, if you will, 2.5% on the WPU because of the 3-year contract with the employee groups. So that, you know, we're well on our way of spending most of that money just because of prior commitments.
So will we need to raise taxes again?
So at this point, we're looking at an overall picture. So the compensation is one piece of the story. The rest is also looking at staffing changes and program enhancements that we're looking at this school cycle.
Because we're talking about increasing taxes about 4.9, right, for the coming?
Yeah, so we were looking in that $5 million range. And those were dollars from prior commitments. Again, looking at the compensation package rolling through for 3 years and also staffing changes over the past couple of years. We had been looking at a 5-year sustainability model and knowing that 2 years of those 5 years would have tax increases in them.
Yeah, but if you're getting more money than you expected, I mean,
then
why can't you back
goes,
off?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're balancing right now is to see what will that new tax amount be. I don't have an exact number just yet. We're balancing all that out now.
Okay. What about equalization? Didn't hear much about that this year.
Nope. So there was no new bills on equalization. We have the impacts of prior bills, so bills that passed last year on the WPU value unit and the equity unit, they're still in play. So as the value of the WPU increases, the property tax piece will increase as well. And so we can expect to watch our basic levy grow as a rate, and a portion of that money will go into that equalization, but no new equalization measures.
All right. House Bill 118, that was to incentivize taking the standardized tests. Park City High School has nearly half of its students opting out. Did this bill pass, now forcing them to take that test?
It did pass. It doesn't force anything. It gives educators the opportunity to include a standardized test as part of their grading. So you can include that as a, they call it a non-academic, or they prohibit non-academic incentives. So you couldn't give them money or treats or have a party at the end of the school year if you took the test. But you can have academic incentives in place, which basically is a grade. You know, if you take the test, this will impact your grade or enhance your grade.
Extra credit? Is that what it is?
That type of stuff. Or it can be part of the main grade as well. It's open that way.
Oh, okay. So you could treat it as a quiz, and right, and if you don't show up, it's a zero.
Correct.
Okay. What about House Bill 168, seatbelts on buses? Did that pass?
That bill did not pass. It was debated on the House floor and was seen as a unfunded mandate because it did not carry an appropriation. So they did not let that out of the House side.
Okay. Before it was dropped this session, educators were protesting the tax reform bill sponsored by Representative Tim Quinn, as it proposed a cut to the income tax rate, which directly funds education. We will see that be taken up again this summer. So what would the school district like to see?
So we're hopeful that they will figure out how to balance this tax reform. Again, they're looking primarily at the sales tax side of the taxing structure of the state, and there are some challenges there, and it will take some bright minds to figure out how to balance that out, and it will probably take some of the special interest groups to say, well, what's our fair share to help adjust the state's tax structure. What we're not so excited about is trying to balance that whole sales tax conversation with income tax. So we prefer not to see an impact on the income tax, but allow the sales tax side of the House to work things out.
Okay, so lawmakers know that, or at least our local reps know that.
Yes, we've mm-hmm. shared that, and we've not protested against the bill in that sense, because we know there's a challenge. There needs to be some solutions, and we'd rather be at the table having the conversation than out protesting and saying no, that, you know, this is not the right thing to do.
Okay, let me see. There was also House Bill 198. This would eliminate letter grades from the state's public school report card. Did that pass?
It did not. It was on the Senate calendar, and they closed their business about a little after 11 o'clock, and so it didn't make it through the Senate.
Okay, so we are going to still see...
We'll still see letter grades.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's something that we have seen, a couple of failing grades over the years mm-hmm. with our schools, and it just seems so unfair. I mean, why the reason to keep them in place?
On this one, I think it's just a matter of it didn't have sufficient time to be addressed. I don't know that there's wholesale arguments against it. It's just trying to move things along. And the interesting thing about the TSSA, so the Teacher and Student Success Act, is that it's designed to improve the very same academic scores that the grades are generated off of. So if you're improving that with the dollars, you will automatically see an improvement on the grade side as well, because they're related to each other.
Right, in the best possible world, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. What other bills were you watching that you would like to report on?
So we were watching some other bills. One has to do, it's House Bill 81, which was on school counselor services. And there was concern expressed that we ask our counselors to do so much. We ask them to do academic counseling, and then we ask them to do mental health counseling. And there's just, that's a large burden to carry in a few people at a school. And so this bill has directed the State Board of Education to separate out those duties and say, okay, what duties are the academic duties? What duties are the mental health duties? And let's separate that in your personnel hiring. Let's get those that are, you know, very well versed in the academics, and those who are very well versed in the mental health side, and hire that way. So we'll look to see some direction come from the State Board of Education through their rules, and we'll see how that carries out into our hiring practices. So that's one that we're watching. There was also the student school safety assessment. We talked about that a little bit, where at the state level there will be guidance given and model policies put out. That was from House Bill 120. And then we also saw House Bill 130, which was on public education exit surveys. So we've been talking about teacher shortages and noticing that teachers after the fifth year, there's a higher exit rate. And so this bill has us collect information as teachers leave. You know, for whatever reason, the survey would capture those reasons, and then we'd report it up to the state level so there's a better understanding and dialogue on how to improve the educational environment and incentives for teachers to stay in the profession.
Okay. I wanted to note, Heidi Matthews, of course, a former teacher at Park City School District, president of the Utah Education Association. And then I heard that another Park City teacher, Renee Pinkney, has been elected vice president. Is that good news for Park City?
Oh, absolutely. It's exciting to see those caliber of people in our programs at the schools rising to the state level and leadership. Those are always great opportunities.
Yeah. Does that just give you kind of an in to having your message heard, or...?
I don't know if there's an end, but the relationships are already there. Then we have great dialogue. Heidi and I talk a great deal during the session about different issues and advise each other on how to approach different bills. So it's a great relationship.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Appreciate the time this morning to catch things up.
Okay. Todd, thanks for coming in. Todd Halber is the Park City School District Business Administrator. Earth Day is coming up in the studio to tell us more about the plans for April 22nd, as well as an update on the recycling markets. I have the Director of Recycle Utah, Carolyn Moore. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's talk a little bit about the recycling markets. A lot of national chatter going on about how we're losing them. What is going on?
Right. It's a tough time to be in the recycling world right now. Commodity markets are pretty, they're like stock markets, easiest thing to compare them to, you know, just like I can't control what Apple stock is today. I can't control, you know, the price of cardboard today. And we're kind of just hanging in there right now. Luckily at Recycle Utah, we're sorting everything. So everything, you know, when a bale of cardboard goes to market, it's legit a bale of cardboard and has the best chance of being successful. And if, you know, a person shopping the markets is going to look at our bale of cardboard versus a bale of cardboard from commingled curbside, they're going to choose ours over because ours will be cleaner. Bale cardboard. So we are doing the best we can. Markets are pretty bad right now, but we work with a lot of local vendors in Salt Lake. We're lucky like that Salt Lake is a big industrial hub. There's a glass recycler called Momentum down in Salt Lake, Interwest Paper, International Paper. There's a couple metal recyclers down in Salt Lake. So there are a lot of options in Salt Lake. It makes me really lucky that we're so close to Salt Lake. I mean, it does cost us money to haul to Salt Lake, and that's a lot of the cost of recycling for us at Recycle Utah. But, you know, we're so close. You know, I've talked to other recyclers in Jackson Hole, and they're hauling to Salt Lake. From Jackson Hole to Salt Lake is a lot farther than us. So we're lucky like that. We are in a good position because of our proximity to Salt Lake, our recyclers in Salt Lake, and then also the fact that we're sorting. So again, the sorting goes back to everybody visiting the center. Thank you for sorting. It's really what's keeping us competitive right now in this tough time.
Yeah. So are there new products, though, coming from recycled goods? We know that, of course, cardboard goes back into cardboard and things like that. But, you know, like when we think of glass and plastic, especially, right.
Glass, brown glass goes back into brown glass. Green and Clear is currently going into fiberglass insulation with the building market in Utah being so good right now. And then, shockingly, we just switched our plastics recycling last fall from drink bottles and milk jugs on the right side of the tent, and then on the left side is plastic bags and 3 through 7s. And shockingly, the drink bottles and milk jugs are high quality plastics right now, going back into plastics. And because we were able to sort them out so clean, it's very unique in that. And because we're able to sort them out so clean, that we are able to get them recycled back into new plastic products. They're higher grade plastic. You know, if you look at a milk jug, it's a more durable plastic than, say, something like your blueberries would come in, which is a lower grade plastic. And the blueberries would go on the left side in the plastics tent, and the milk jugs would go on the right. So it's really getting those higher quality plastics out and getting the lower quality plastics out of them to keep them competitive. It's a very tricky market right now, and if I could predict what things would be like in a year, I totally would. But for now, we're just doing what we can to keep things as clean as we can.
Yeah, and I'm hearing about places in Salt Lake City, and I wish I could give you a name or an address or something. But I mean, a place that you can go now and you can take your laundry container, plastic laundry container, and just get it refilled, as opposed to having to buy a new, you know, laundry soap.
Yeah. I don't know the names of them either. I have some friends who've looked into it. I do a lot of that up here in the stores. I have a bag that I fill with coffee beans when I go buy coffee, because usually most coffee bags aren't recyclable. So I encourage you to do that. Like Whole Foods has them, Smith's has them, you know, bulk, shop in bulk, or even if you're going to buy meat, a lot of meat comes in an unrecyclable styrofoam tray. Go up to the deli with your own container and have them tear it out and put your meat directly in the container like that. There's a lot of ways you can get creative locally here without having to go to a store that specifically does that kind of thing in Salt Lake.
So what do you mean with your meat at Whole Foods? I mean, it's already in the styrofoam.
Like if you were to go to Smith's, prepackaged meat would be in a styrofoam tray.
But just go to the counter.
Just go up to the counter and bring your own little container and say, tear out my container first and then put the meat in it and then do the price that way. And you can skip the whole styrofoam container and everything that way to feel a little bit better about it and not have to take home something that's not recyclable. So
yeah, and something I feel so bad about, but I love arugula. I mean, right? So it's like once a week I buy a plastic container of arugula, but where else am I going
to
get it?
Right. Yeah, it's a tricky game to play. You could shop the fresh section and just grab the arugula without a bag. It's tricky. It's always been a thing. Like my husband and I will be like, hey, you know, we ended up with this styrofoam tray. What can we do to not have this next time? So kind of think about it that way and find something that works for you. You know, something works different for everybody. And our board chair was like, hey, I've never used these reusable produce bags. You know, it's a kind of a cloth bag that you put your produce in when you go shopping. And that works well for him. So finding things, and me, I kind of like the game with the coffee. I don't know. That's my thing. And everybody has something that works for them, or try something different when you go to the store. Maybe for somebody else, it's as simple as bringing your own coffee cup when you go get coffee, or bringing your own reusable shopping bag. There's a lot of things, and I encourage everybody to find something that works for them. And don't feel bad. We can't all be perfect with being the reusable all-star at the grocery store. You know, you might see me with, you know, some plastic bag, and I was like, I couldn't figure out how to solve this one yet, but here I have my coffee beans in this bag. So I encourage everybody to figure out something that works for them, especially with Earth Month coming up in April.
All right. You've been very busy in our schools, like always. These education efforts basically happen every year, yeah?
Right. Our busiest time is the spring and the fall, and we just got into the busy time in the spring. Mary Klosser, Education Director, teaches about like the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, water production and reduction, and other sustainable lifestyle choices like we just talked about. And if you have kids at Parley's Park or Trailside, Mary's at Parley's this week. She's there right now, actually, and Trailside next week. So if you have kids there, ask them if Miss Mary came to their class and what they learned.
Yeah. Now, does she go to certain grades, or do you try and touch all of the students in Summit County?
All elementary, so grades 5 and under. And she tries to touch everybody. We were in North Summit recently, too. And then different lessons based on the age. You know, kindergartners are just learning, you know, how to take care of Mother Earth, whereas a fifth grader is learning the science behind climate change.
So they hear these messages like 6 years then.
Right, yeah. They get a different message every year and a different theme based on their age. And we try to work through them, and hopefully they'll come home and get their parents recycler and at least be aware of, you know, how we need to take care of our environment.
Okay, Earth Day is coming up, as I mentioned, April 22nd, but let's just give people a preview of what's going to happen.
Sure. April is our busiest month at Recycle Utah. It has Earth Day in it, so it kind of becomes all of busy month. We're going to do April 22nd, Earth Day. That is a Monday at Wasatch Brew Pub, 5 to 8 p.m. This is a fundraiser for education programs, so the programs Mary's doing just today. Tickets are $35 for adults and $20 for kids 8 and over. In advance, and then at the door they go up quite a bit because we're trying to make sure everybody gets it ahead of time. Your ticket includes food, drink tickets, live music, and a silent auction. And then away, heads up, we have Pride in Your Park Community Cleanup Day, May 4th. We'll be out cleaning up Park City and surrounding areas from 9 until 1. If you are interested in that or the Earth Day event, you can check out recycleutah.org. And then if you've been holding on to those hazardous things, that's coming up April 27th, Hazmat Day, at the Cabriolet parking lot at Canyons.
Okay. Any news on a new center location?
Working hard. They just need the county to pick a spot, and we'll have a spot, I guess.
Okay. Carolyn, thanks.
Thank you.
Carolyn Wara is the executive director of Recycle Utah. It's 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the fifth annual Backcountry Bow Wow will be held this Thursday. In the studio to tell us more, I have one of the members of the Park City Mountain Ski Patrol, Devin Wilkinson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So I mentioned Thursday. It's going to be at OP Rockwell starting, what, 6 o'clock? Doors
6 open? O'clock or doors, yep. And then the band goes on at 7 o'clock.
Okay, who's the band?
So this year we've got Sin City Soul. They're kind of a funk New Orleans-inspired band. They play all over Park City in the Salt Lake area. And they'll play from 7 to 10 with raffles going on throughout all of that.
Okay, so why are you guys doing this?
So this is to support Wasatch Backcountry Rescue. They kind of run all the avalanche dog programs around here and support the community through different educational opportunities and backcountry rescue. They were part of, we've had four incidents this year, and they were part of all four of those in recovering those bodies. It also supports the Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association, and donations, the money goes to things like the Injured Patroller Fund and stuff like that.
Okay. So really you've just kind of got the whole area then for this. There's a $10 price?
Yeah, that's correct.
In,
so it's $10 for a ticket. If you buy them in advance, you get 10 raffle tickets at the door. You can also buy more raffle tickets while you're there. You can buy them online at OP Rockwell. If you go to their website, they have a link to Ticketfly. You can also buy them tonight. We are hosting a movie at the Jim Santee Auditorium in the Park City Library. It's called Going Through. It's about Follow Through. It's Carolyn Gleick skiing all 90 lines in the shooting gallery, but we will have tickets there that you can buy as well for the fundraiser on Thursday.
Okay, what kind of things do you have to...
We have all sorts of things this year. We've got donations from Big Agnes, Hestra, Black Diamond, Atomic. We've got some skis. We've got poles. We've got helmets. We've got some sleeping bags. We have goggles. It's kind of a plethora of things.
So how much are you hoping to raise?
In the past, we've been able to raise anywhere from $5,000 to $6,000, which is super, super helpful because we, Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association, we don't have any sort of income per se, and WBR is a 501c3 nonprofit. So things like this are how we make our money.
Okay. So what kind of season has it been for you guys? You're worn out?
It's definitely been a long season, but much better than last year. Lots more snow, which we're always happy about, and it's good to finally see the sun.
Yeah, because you had, not only the snow, but lots of wind, too.
Yeah, a lot of wind up here, yep, a lot of early mornings.
Yeah, and then in terms of just the number of explosives, I'm guessing that probably tripled, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Any way to measure that?
I wouldn't know the measurements on that.
But. Okay. Again, it's the fifth annual Backcountry Bow Wow. That's Thursday night at OP Rockwell. You can, again, get tickets tonight at the Jim Santee or just show up and buy them at the door?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Nope. That's all. We'd love to see you guys there. It's a really fun event. There's drink specials, live music, and really cool swag. So...
Okay, Devin Wilkinson with the Park City Professional Ski Patrol Association. Thanks for your time.
Yeah.